guys, what's up? This is Tessa Jeffers for PremierGuitar.com. I am on stage at the legendary Ryman Auditorium before the Deep Purple show with the one and only Steve Morse. How are you doing today?
Doing great, thanks.
Thanks for joining us today. He's about ready to show us the tools he uses to make the magic. So, what are you holding?
This is number one. Been around for a while. It's obviously a showpiece. I never play it.
No. This is how it all began. This is your signature.
I've worn out 10 sets of frets already. And
on just this one guitar?
Yes. And that, in fact, this is a new set of stainless frets. It's hopefully going to last longer. And one time I tried industrial ceramic frets on one of my Frankenstein guitars, just in the hopes that I wouldn't have to ever refret my guitar.
It didn't work.
Well, sonically it didn't work, but you know, physically it did. It was, and they were the Rockwell hardness of the material was so high that they wouldn't have worn out.
So I mean, of course your fans are going to know this, but for some viewers at home don't know that this guitar was based on a guitar that you made yourself, right?
Yeah, but so, it's stuff that was standard in the industry. For instance, the neck came from a Telecaster that I got paid for a session with, an old Telecaster. And the Telecaster had been butchered and wasn't stock and been painted over, not by professional. So, you know, it looked like, just to the guy that gave it to me, I think it sort of looked like, you know, not that great of a piece of equipment. But actually, it does say the neck, the body of the Telecaster is what I wanted. Because it was a big slab of wood. Once I stripped the paint off, I was like, I could put any pickups I want on this. And I could get the sound of a Gibson, sound of a Fender, and, you know, other things.
Right.
So I took my Stratocaster neck, and the Stratocaster, I had been having a hard time getting the sounds I wanted, you know. You know what a Stratocaster is really good for, right, and everything, but if you want to emulate, you know, say a Jimmy Page solo, it's just not a Strat thing, you know?
Right.
So here I am, a teenager, just like, well, my dad has hammers and chisels in the tool place. So trial and error, putting things together. And I ended up with a stop tail piece from a 12 string guitar that I got this piece at a pawn shop. And it had 12 holes in it and I only needed six. So I kept a spare string looped around there because I was breaking my E string a lot, the high, so that I could, you know, quickly change the string. And the Gibson Tune-O-Matic bridge was available as an accessory at our local music store. And then I started with, well, every pickup I could get my hands on, I tried in there, and ended up with plastic plates over other holes. And pretty soon I settled on four pickups.
Okay.
Arrangement that's very similar to this.
It was like humbucker, single coil, humbucker.
Yes, yes. Very good.
Well, you have two signature model guitars now. This is the first one. The second one has only three pickups.
Yeah.
Right.
And the second one is the more practical.
So these are Ernie Ball Music Man's.
Yeah.
The prototype, like the first one, is just called Steve Morse, and this one's called YTD?
Y2D.
Y2D. And what does Y2D mean?
It was just a joke. Back then, there was this hype that when we hit the year 2000, all the computers are going to, the programs are going to crash, and we're not going to have power and all this stuff. And so Y2K was a big scare.
I remember.
and it just happened to have been 20 years since we made number one. So 20 years, Y2D per decade.
That's awesome.
So 2 decades later. And it's
beautiful.
It's
color.
Just such a perfect guitar.
So the flame maple is one difference.
Yeah, it's got a top with a beautiful finish. And then once I saw the finish, I said, you can't cover this up with a pickguard. Can you please try a clear pickguard?
That looks great.
And they did. And that meant that everything had to be close, you know, closer routed and finished in there. So it's basically like all the work of doing a, you know, a carved top guitar,
right,
without, and then cover it up with a pickguard. And then the switching. I wanted the switch to go from here to these two, so far so good, to this, everything's perfect. But this position, I wanted these two. So it meant I couldn't use the normal five-way switch, which has, you know, a knife that goes between these two, touches these two, just this two, and just like that, because I wanted to hook these two together on this position. So it meant a multi-pole switch. And of course they sourced one and had one right in there so that we get this combination in this position. The reason I arrived at this is I found that even though I had mathematically lots of combinations, there was five that I used every single night, every single show.
With every different bands or Deep Purple?
Every band.
Every band.
There was five sounds that I just consistently used. And, you know, one is, you know, bridge pickup, the other one's singing high neck pickup, the combination of the two for a clean without any out of phase, and then these two together, which gives an out of phase kind of funky sound, and then the single coil by itself for the Fendery sound.
Right.
So we...
So taking the one single coil out.
Yeah, Sterling Ball said, you know, I really wish you could do one with simple wiring because everyone gets confused with this. So he wants it wired exactly the way I do it. And the way I do it doesn't make sense to people. So this one, just, you know, for bridge, push down this way. For neck, push down this way. In the middle, you get this, you know, and everything's logical except for this one here, which is these two. It's very important that the distance between these pickups is here because there's no out of phase characteristic. It's very clean. And that's what I use for a lot of the, like if I was going to play a classical piece on here, I would use that combination.
And that's why you chose only to have 22 frets.
Yes, very good, very good. And that's exactly right. One of my favorite things about a Music Man is the placement of the truss rod control. It's a wheel with sprockets. So you stick a nail in there or a screwdriver, mm-hmm. a small screwdriver, whatever, and just instantly make the tiniest instantaneous adjustment if it's not perfect. And it, you know, normally they stay real stable, but I'm a freak about getting this thing right. And it's so easy. I never have to call a tech. I don't. And Tommy can do it in his sleep. You just, oh, it feels like that. You know, if you go from the middle of Florida where I live to the desert, you know.
Or even here.
Yeah.
It's so humid.
And it spends enough time out in the sun or whatever. You know, the guitars get abused there.
Right.
So I'll just look and go, oh, nope, no big deal. You just go like that. Done. That's the adjustment. But anyway, that allows this pickup to be closer to the center. The center is where the fundamental of the tone of the string is. And farther away, closer to the bridge, is where the harmonics are. The harmonics, so I use this in opposite. When I'm playing low, on a low, fat, low string, I use the one with more harmonics to enable the sound to be heard more. When I'm playing up high, to keep it from being irritating, I switch to this pickup and get more of the pure center of this with less harmonics. So as I go higher, less harmonics, lower, more harmonics.
Awesome. So say you're doing a Deep Purple show, would you primarily play like your number one or would you play the Y2D?
I'm going to be doing a Deep Purple show in a few minutes,
a couple hours.
And I'm going to be using the Y2D predominantly. Whammy bar, and like this, and we have a drop D version, just so I don't, Tommy will hand me another guitar, just because we can.
Right.
But, you know, if I'm doing a small gig with my friends, or with my band, or playing a gig with my son or something.
You have more than one other band,
right.
How many bands do you have?
well, we just did a Flying Colors tour, where there's a live DVD coming out very soon, and I use number one all night long, and this is, you know, it's light, it's perfectly balanced. You set it on your knee, and it doesn't go this way that way, so you can practice for hours comfortably. It will do everything that I need, and yes, in this position, a Les Paul might sound a little bit more gritty. In this position, maybe a 335 might sing a little bit more. This position, you know, Hendrix's Strat or Eric Johnson's Strat is going to sound a little bit better here. Maybe somebody, you know, could do a little bit better with, one of Pete Townsend's Fenders. But You put all this together and just all night long, change, 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 change.
I was just
going
to ask you if
change,
you wanted to talk a little bit about what these...
Oh, yeah, they're switching.
You know, I know it's complicated, okay. But our viewers really like that kind of stuff.
This is a bypass switch and a combination switch. So I leave this down most of the time. That's only for this pickup. The big switch, this three-way switch, is the stock tele switch, basically. So we go from here, this pickup, here, this pickup. I know it makes no sense. Here, this pickup. Now, this is an on-off, this was on my original Frankenstein, an on-off switch from an electric fan. So it just on.
Oh, really?
Know, yeah. It's just a single pull, single throw switch. And you push this down and it connects this pickup to the output of that. So if I'm in this position, it's this pickup anyway. I just flip the switch, nothing changes.
Okay.
I just have two wires going to the output. Now I go here, just this pickup, flip this switch, and I have the two humbuckers.
Okay.
I go here, and just this by itself, flip it on, and these two together.
Okay.
Now, from the output of this switch, we have one more possibility. Bypass this pickup, or combine the whatever you've got here with this pickup, or completely isolate just this pickup.
Right, so this one's mainly for this single coil.
Yes.
Controlling that one.
And this is the bypass switch position down. Basically, I say, if anybody has this guitar, if you're doing rhythm, push everything down, turn all everything up, and start there.
There are some people that have this guitar that Bonamassa had one. I remember reading about it.
Yeah, I saw him play the Y2D.
Oh, maybe it's that one. Yeah.
Okay.
So how many guitars will you, like say tonight's show, how many guitars will you play throughout the night?
I don't know. I mean, maybe five or six. So let's see, we got, start with Whammy, because we're doing Highway Star up front. And then switch to this, so there's two. Number one, and we're playing a gold top. Limited,
I won't quote you on it.
Four, five, six, I think six.
Nice.
But my point when I first held this guitar up was that I can play this all night long. It doesn't have a whammy, so if I need whammy, then I need another guitar. But
it's your dream guitar.
This I can play all my compositions on.
Right.
All night long.
So what about Smoke on the Water? What do you?
That's this.
What switching do you have on?
Oh, just this pickup. And the key to Smoke is getting the tone with your fingers. So I grabbed both strings together, and the Richie had so much low end on that first note, the first, basically the intro of the song, that I sometimes add the low note with my thumb very gently, but it's predominantly playing fourth. But if you add a little note, it's, just sneak a little bit of this in. And you know, when you're playing with an amp with high gain, you need to control everything. You can't just let
right.
everything
you
ring.
You make it look easy, but.
It's all about control. And that's why you'll see guitarists, again, I mentioned Eric Johnson, people like Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, anybody that has their own sound, mm-hmm. they pick up any guitar, their playing will sound similar. You know, you'll sound like them because there's a lot of control in the fingers. Left hand, right hand, and the guitarists that use actual skin on the strings, I think, can get the most control. And it limits you in some ways with speed and certain techniques, but that's a
makes
you know, one
sense.
Technique that every guitarist should learn for sure.
Right, well, speaking of tone, should we talk about your signature heads?
Definitely.
Okay, so you have the Engel 100, the signature head that you play through. Mm. And so can you tell us a little bit, like what are the specs on that? How many channels? How do you use it to get your tone?
Okay, well on the surface, it sounds like a lot of other amps. It's got 100 watts and three channels. It's switchable by several ways. You can have a regular foot switch scroll through the settings with just, you know, with the on-off type momentary foot switch, but almost everyone uses a MIDI control foot switch, which you could also have, you know, if you have a MIDI synthesizer or something, you could change channels that way. And the main thing that the MIDI control changes is channel selection, gain, there's a couple tone shifts, and on the third channel, which is my very extensive mid-range channel, there's some tone centers that can be moved. Also, you can change between two different master volumes. Handy for somebody that needs to turn up for a solo and back down to fit in with the rest of the band. And also, you can change between two different effects sends. So you have effects send and return A and B. And I use that when I use the TC Hall of Fame reverb. It's set on a different effect send, so I don't have to go to the pedal to turn it on or off.
You just use your MIDI.
Yeah, exactly. The channel one is what I thought was the most clean and creamy, smooth, class A sounding, just the most expensive clean amp you've ever heard. It just sounds like cost is no object. I want the best clean sound there is. In fact, I can play my electric classical guitar, plug it straight into that, and as long as I don't overdrive the front end, just bring the front end down, the input gain down, it sounds fantastic.
Do you have that on tour right now?
Well, not with Deep Purple, but with when I play with Steve Morse Band or Dregs or something, we often do have a classical duet, like
yeah,
Dave and
so
I
you
would play
some
something.
Really nice guitars.
So that's one thing. Then also you can hit the front end harder and get that very smooth progressive distortion. So channel one is I just love. Well, I'm sorry, every channel I just love.
Can't pick just one.
Channel two is what I thought just the put everything together of all the angle amps I've ever played through, and this is it. Put everything on six on channel two. Plug in your guitar, and if it doesn't sound fantastic, your guitar cord is broken.
Volume six. It's failsafe.
Yeah, it's the bread and butter distortion sound that just everybody loves. You put a ribbon mic in front of an Engl on my channel two with any guitar, put a ribbon mic, and if your engineer complains about it,
it's
tell
you.
Him to check the wiring. tell him to just unplug it and make sure he's running the right cable.
So do you play two a lot then?
Yeah, yeah, that is bread and butter, like I said. Channel three is my specialty channel. It's got, it's everything that channel two does, but there's four mid-range controls, and you can shift the centers of those and combine them almost there with a separate mixer at the end of it. It's amazing. It's what I asked for. I said, give me the most control you can out of this mid-range possible without taking away anything from the tone, without adding any stages of active EQ. In other words, I don't want just cut frequency. I want to find out everything that you can push and get out of this in mid-range area. And so
that's a nuanced channel that you would use for very specific parts.
It's great for soloing, is what I found. You can make your solo come out with, by adding that extra bit of mid-range, and not just honky mid-range, but focus. You can find the right place depending on what your guitar is, what sound you're looking for. It allows the solo to cut through without using more meter. So your sound man, it's gonna say like, wow, I can hear the guitar fine. I must be mixing it great. But you switch back to channel two for the rest of the song, and nobody is any the wiser. You haven't increased your volume, but you've increased your apparent volume, because that part of the guitar that speaks the most within a band setting, because you got the cymbals covering up all
right.
The super high end, the bass and the bass drum eating a lot of the low end. Mid-range is where all your identity lives. And
so it's like a fatter mid-range.
Yeah, it's fatter, more focused. You can take things out, bring things, accentuate parts. So it's like my secret weapon to help myself
we
be heard.
We just told everybody.
No, it's
I'm kidding.
Everything I do is really actually really simple and
you're
and
a
obvious.
Guy.
It's available for anybody. There are all kinds of controls in the back, lots of different outputs, amazing amount of like I said, control sound, and one amp head will drive all these cabinets.
Six.
Easily. You could easily do eight cabinets. with one head. Tonight I'm going to be using less than this entire stack, I think. And it depends on how it goes for the first three songs.
Yeah, you guys use hand signals.
Yeah, we change. We're starting with the cabinets on their side, so the sound is not angled up toward the people on the top or right into my ears. It's spread out to the side, so we're getting different angles of angle.
So depending on venue.
Yeah, depending on the venue. So we're starting with all the bottom cabinets, and then we can add these two speakers here, or these four speakers, and along the lines. The dry is coming out of this area. The middle is going to be the wet. Wet is only delay. When I press down on those Ernie Ball volume pedals, when I press down on them, it's just incrementally how much delay is being added to the sound. Nothing's changed with the dry sound. So it's just like if you're adding delay with a fader in the studio.
Right.
So you're adding it to the sound, nothing else.
And you don't use very many pedals, but you do use two TC Electronic, the delays.
Yes.
What kind are they?
They're called, they're the flashback delay, but with the tone print. The tone print, in fact, I go to the website and download my tone print, which they graciously allowed me to put all the parameters in using their computer. And they made it into this preset that you can, it's really bizarre how you do it. You load this into an iPhone, and I couldn't believe it worked. Turn on your guitar, plug it into the delay pedal, turn on the pedal, and
that's nuts.
You put the phone up to the pickup, and that just that leakage through the pickup, because it's digital, it's on or off, and you know, zeros and ones, it gives the entire instructions to the pedal, and it's locked in there.
That's amazing.
So there's only two things we do. We take them off the shelf, put the brand straight from the box, put the tone print in, and there's a switch on the back where you can, it's called a dry kill. So when you put the delay up all the way, instead of 50-50 dry and 50-50 wet, like most delays would be, it's just, you can, with a dry kill switch on the back, you can have it completely just delay.
So that's how you designed your tone print to be?
Yes.
That's what you want.
And all the TC things, actually you can use tone print in line. You can use it in effects loop and without the dry kill, where it's combined with the dry. It works very well with that. There's no out of phase problems. There's no problems at all. But just I just prefer it this way. And all the TC pedals have true bypass, which is very important for me, because I don't like transformers between me and the guitar. The amp head just goes straight through. The Keeley pedal, you know, it just, I like pedals that make a little bit of a click when I hit them, because that means, oh yes, it's bypass, you know.
Nice. But so you use the two TC Electronic delays, one short, one long.
Yes.
And then the third pedal you use is the reverb.
No. In this setup with purple, I use it for some gimmicky effects. They're basically octave below and a third, minor third above, for harmonizing a few notes of a couple of Ritchie's solo from the classic era of Deep Purple. And the octave, it just a different sound for a kind of a quirky solo.
Okay. So like if you were going to be playing with Flying Colors or with your son or your many other bands, Steve Morse Trio, is that right?
Yeah, Steve Morse.
Do you have the same effects, or do you have like a different pedal board? You're going to use your same guitars and your Ingles. Do you use the same effects?
Same effects. I just have a smaller pedal board. I don't use any transformer or any of those low impedance, because we don't have long leads. You know, like here I've got a super long lead in case I need to be 50 feet away.
Oh right.
Some stage environments are like that. So I just use regular guitar chords. Combine them, a passive mixer instead of, you know, that mixer, and just plug straight into the amp here, and take the preamp out, and put or the effects loop inputs and outputs for the reverb, and just set it on top of the amp where I can make sure it's set right, and it's super easy. My pedal board is one of those tiny ones that's the size of a briefcase. if I need to go to a gig.
Right, and you also, you keep your number one with you at all times. I heard that.
Yeah, well, oh yeah.
There was one other thing about your Ingleheads that you were talking about earlier, that you used to use like a 5150 and a different Marshall.
But the 2000.
But the things that you were looking for in your signature head, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, what first and foremost, what the band wanted and the recording engineers wanted was more clarity. And I found out that what I like sitting by myself and playing is different than sometimes than what works when you're playing with everybody else.
Stadium or?
Or just in a mix. If you're in the mix of in a studio, what the engineer wants you to have is often different than what sounds great by itself. So I discovered that crystal clear high end, not the really distorted, irritating high end, is part of the magic of the angle. And you know, frankly, I would love it if I could get a fantastic sound from a inexpensive amp. I have no ego problems at all about what I have to, you know, how expensive my gear has to be or anything like that. It just happened to be that this is the only way I could get it. I understand there are a lot of custom amp builders and boutique amp builders that have a similar, real high-end approach to keeping the sound pure, that can also give you that extra few points of clarity. But that's it. The clean sound like nothing I've ever heard. The distorted sound just broad and big and full of sustain, but clarity when you're picking the notes. And it's the third
tenor. Do you play acoustic or classical? Like you have some nylon strings.
Yeah,
steel strings.
Electric nylon strings.
Do you just play your Ingles too?
Or yeah, what? I take my John Buscarino made me a guitar, and it's got an active EQ and everything on it, and a crystals in the bridge, like most of them do. And that really, it's sensitive to how you set it. They all are. When I plug it in here, it just sounds.
It's your wheelhouse.
Sounds so nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Lastly, Steve, could you tell us what kind of strings you're using? It's Ernie Ball, right?
Ernie Ball strings, and I've recently switched to the regular slinkies, and the super slinkies, the nine set, and standard tuning, and maybe up to 11s for the detuned guitars. Tommy knows the exact gauges.
Mm-hmm. Do you keep the sets like stock, or do you switch out some strings for heavier or lighter?
Lately, I've been using the stock super slinky, the pink package.
Okay. And then for picks, what kind of picks?
Oh, picks. Part of my, continuing adjustment to, me being just turning 21 years old, is I'm trying different things to minimize the shock. On my wrist, because I practice a lot. So I've gone from heavies to mediums.
Really?
And the theory being that flex, and I'm incorporating different techniques instead of my standard, kind of flexing in two axes in the wrist. I'm also doing just the standard.
So is that opening up possibilities for you, or making it more exciting?
It's giving me more endurance and more possibilities. Yeah, for playing things at speed without doing this real harsh technique. That's that's now harsh for me. It was easy for the first 50 years.
So there was one other thing I didn't ask you about your cabinets. Do you know what kind of speakers are?
Yes, the speakers are vintage 30 Celestians, and I've taken a lot of these apart. Actually, I've taken cabinets apart, and I've been practicing trying all different combinations of things, wiring, to see how it sounds different, all parallel, series parallel, and even all series, and recently cut a cabinet in half to do some gigs. To have a small dry and a small wet. So
that's fun.
Yeah, these are very well made, and they're vintage 30s.
Okay. You just mentioned something about practicing. How often do you practice?
Every day.
And it's still fun?
Practicing is not always fun, but it's something you have to do. It just like, you know, if it's raining outside and you jog every day or exercise
right.
every day, if you don't have an indoor bicycle, you go ride in the rain, you know?
Right.
So sometimes if it hurts to practice, I still do it.
Well, is there anything else you want to talk about that I didn't ask? Thank you so much. You've been really gracious with your time.
Well, thank you.
The legend Steve Morse. This is Tessa Jeffers for PremierGuitar.com.
Forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.